This is Issues 2023. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is former Wichita police officer James Espinoza. Welcome to Issues 2023, James.
Good morning. How are you?
Law enforcement has become a hot topic over the past few years, I guess, but a number of high-profile cases charging misconduct and even murder by on-duty officers. And today, I want to give you the perspective of a veteran police officer on this. Give us a brief look, if you will, James, at your career with WPD. When did you sign on? And what specific duties did you perform there?
In 1993, I joined the Wichita Police Department and was assigned to patrol. And I worked Northeast Wichita, which is now known as Patrol North. And it's where I kind of learned the trade a little bit. Obviously, growing up in a law enforcement family, I kind of knew what I was getting into. And I think as my career evolved, I was fortunate enough to serve all of Wichita. I was assigned to every bureau in the city, and was very blessed to do several different things.
Tell us a little bit about your work with the gang unit. That caught my eye in your bio.
Sure. I was on a team called SCAT, which is Special Community Action Team, and we worked with gangs and did drug enforcement, street level stuff, and then had the opportunity to be a gang officer in investigations. And, you know, identified gang members, worked gang crimes, and that was probably my favorite job on the department.
Did you make any headway with that?
I was fortunate enough.
Not just you personally. I mean, did we, the police department, have done any good?
Absolutely. We did. I feel very proud of the work the men and women did on this department. I know in 97 we had the drive-by task force at that point where I was selected of one of 16 employees or officers and detectives that were part of that group. And at the time they put us together, we were averaging a drive-by a day here in Wichita.
Wow.
It was really out of control.
Oh,
and so they selected 16 of us that they thought could do the job, and we shut that down pretty good. At the same time, we had a group of Aryan Brotherhoods in Wichita that wanted to raise their ugly head, and I think we ended up getting 7 or 8 of them federally indicted for all their hate crimes they were doing in the Wichita area.
Is that something you were doing undercover then, or?
We did some undercover stuff. It just kind of formed as it went along. I mean, they had some bad luck because we just happened to have this fantastic team of 16, and we went after them pretty good and indicted them and got them charged. But at the same time, we worked hand-in-hand with homicides. And later on, when I was in the gang unit in the years of 2000 and I was working the quadruple murders we had here in Wichita, and it was probably the 10 worst days in Wichita history is in terms of violence.
I think I'll touch on that here in a second, I believe. Tell me about your – I didn't mention this, I don't think, in your bio. Tell me about your time as the police department's media relations officer. how long did you do that? A year, 2 years?
About 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, not a job I really wanted.
You didn't?
I did not. however, I built some fantastic relationships, obviously with Ted, the sports head here. I call him a friend now, and he was a good man. And other media people, Dev Ferris was another good one, and I'm still friends with today. And I still talk to Hannah Davis down in Texas every once in a while. She's a Wichitan. And some others across Ann Meyer up in she's in Minnesota now doing her thing. So it was good. It was a good learning experience. I know that. I definitely knew that.
What opinions did you form about the media? you mentioned some people that you've made, and many media people are very good at what they do. But I know. I'm one of them. I know what this is about.
Well,
sometimes they can be a little annoying.
Well, they are. I never forget. I'm going to tell the story. I wish Ted was here. But we would do what's called arrest sheets. And we had recognizable athletes in our community that have committed, crimes and stuff. And I would ignore those. However, I do enough research before we do the 10 o'clock briefing that they no longer have. And knowing that Ted would find those names and ask me questions about them. And he'd give that little look and ask the question, and he would kick back in his chair, and he'd usually have a pen in his hand and kind of sit back or put it in his mouth and just listen to what I was going to say. So I actually had a phone call from one Coach Marshall once about he disliked me mentioning this one certain player. But it's public record, it was a decision they made, and
if you can't do the time, don't do the
crime. Well, yeah, something like that anyway. So yeah, make better decisions, I guess. Yeah, so, but yeah, the media. I have some strong opinions about the media, Steve. I think that there's good reporters, like you said, and there's some awful ones. But as we continue this, there's bad police officers and there's bad, you know, school teachers. There's bad parents and there's certainly bad kids. So
you're working with human beings.
You are. Yep, absolutely. Yep.
So, James, why did you decide to retire from WPD?
Well, over the years, I can't say I'm a horrible driver, but I've been in several car wrecks on the job, and I think at one point it was over 13. And again, those aren't all my fault, but I had some health injuries or some medical injuries to my my back and neck, and I just was tired after 25 and a half years and tired of going to work and hurting all the time. So I kind of pulled the plug.
Okay. That's fair enough. Now, yeah. You come, as you mentioned before, you come from a police family.
I do.
Your father was a very well-respected officer in our community.
Yes.
Talk about your that growing up as a cop, in a cop family like that.
Well, let's just say Big John had an influence. That's what people called him, or JT. Had a big influence in my life, obviously. There is something to say about living with a police officer. I really believe this. He told me once, you know, when you're a police officer, you're a police officer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And unfortunately, the tide has turned with that. You know, a lot of nonsense going on across our country, but he was always one that you know, showed me to be, you know, have good integrity. And I think that's what's important.
Was he talk to you a lot, or was he quiet?
Well,
I didn't know him, but
he came from 17 brothers and sisters. And grew up in Hutchinson, Kansas, and they were very poor. I mean,
sure.
That's just what it was. And you know, and so he learned, one, he didn't want 17 kids. He just had me and a brother. And so he worked hard and worked part-time jobs and tried to take his family the best they could. Unfortunately for John, he was fired on the strike in, I believe, 77 or 78. He was one of the 20-some that were actually fired when they went back to get their jobs back. And they fired him. And I have a great picture of him on the front of the Eagle and Beacon. He's holding up petitions. And I think that probably had something to influence people to get rid of him, because he was kind of a leader that way.
Well, then on the job, he did not hold back. He confronted the people that were breaking the law, and it got him hurt at least once, I know.
He was in multiple shootings, was shot at least two different times. You know, and I gotta say this, you know, the police work, you know, the pay is I think good now, to be honest with you. Back then in 78, a family of four could still get government milk and cheese. That's how bad they were getting paid, and that's why they striked. And thank goodness they did. And I think officers today forget what those men and women went through back in 78 to get where they are today. But, yeah, he was very vocal, and he was definitely not a desk jockey.
Any doubt about what you were going to do for a living, James?
There was. I actually wanted to be a school teacher and a coach, and I have been able now to do both of those after law enforcement. And then when he was shot – I was playing ball up at Tabor College, and when he was shot in 92, I decided to come home and sign up. That's what happened.
Okay.
So,
well, talk about I want to talk a couple of high-profile cases.
Sure.
That you've been at least somewhat involved in over the years.
Yeah.
The Carr brothers are in prison for murdering, five people?
That's correct.
And I understand you had a role in the arrest of at least one of them. Tell us about that day.
Well, what a day it was. However, a few days before that, we'd had another quadruple murder.
Oh, that's right. There were.
And
there were two of them.
They call them the Forgotten Four.
Yes,
obviously,
yes.
I don't forget them. Rashonda Wheaton and Odessa Ford, Quincy Williams and Jermaine Levy were four. I call them kids, right? Under 20. I mean,
yeah.
they were babies. And it was a domestic situation, and a guy walked in, or actually two people walked in and murdered all four. And I believe I think he's serving life in El Dorado as well. But so, moving on, I'd worked a late night, working hours, got off about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then at the time, the phone rang at my home, and my wife at the time answered the phone and started crying. and I didn't know what was going on. And I said, what's going on? And it was a fellow colleague of mine who had said, hey, we got another four murdered. Mm. And I thought, well, we're killing people in fours now? I mean, it was very, you know, and I kind of tried to envision it because it was snow on the ground. It was a very cold night. I'm trying to envision in my mind what was going on. And so I got up, and I only had about an hour's sleep, maybe two, and called down investigations, and I got a hold of Kelly Otis, who is a homicide detective. And I said, hey, what's going on? Do we need to come in? He goes, yeah, I'll make that call. Come in. So got dressed. We kind of had a phone chain. I called my partner, who called another guy in the gang unit, and that guy called another, and we all went in. And with the help of the community, we had an individual that saw Reginald Carr at 5400 East 21st Street in the apartment complex trying to move a big screen TV into his apartment. And we got that information, and we swooped in the area, and I guess by luck, I was at the door of the apartment. I believe it was 807 or 809, if I recall, and knocked on the door, and nobody answered. Knocked again, and the young lady said, hey, what's going on? I said, hey, the police need to open the door. And, of course, I was concerned for her safety because here you have a guy that's suspected of killing four people, and there was a survivor who I'd actually went to the hospital and talked to first. I was the first one to really talk to her at the hospital. And I was trying to get a description of the suspect, and I asked her to tell me all she could, and she did. And it was I've never forgot the image.
The image of this young lady? Is that what you're talking about, James?
The room she was in.
The room she was in, yeah. Okay. Was it ICU then, or with a lot of?
Yeah, she was in ICU. It was a dark room because she was shot in the head.
Yeah.
And her eyes obviously hurt. And,
sure, sure. Tell me about what happened at that door when you knocked on the door. Go from there.
Well, knocking on the door, I had some fantastic officers behind me, some of the best cops I've ever worked with. And Jamie Hostie, who's now an FBI agent down in Atlanta, and Renee Bryant, Paul Herman, and some other guys. And you talked a little bit before about Robert Bachman, Bob Bachman. He was behind me as well. So I knew I was good and covered. And we ended up walking in or pushing my way in a little bit. And Reginald tried to jump out the window, and we had a KHP canine waiting for him there. So he didn't want any of that. And then we went in and we arrested him. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. That's enough. Hey, how about give us, if you can, any insight into the BTK arrest? Of course, that's a very high profile.
It was, and at that time I was assigned to undercover narcotics, and every lead they got, they would, you know, they'd give it to us sometimes. We had detectives that would go into bars and identify a guy that was a, and we'd take a glass from the bar, and then we'd do DNA on the glass to try to figure out who it was. Or a guy throw a cigarette out, we would grab the cigarette butt, and we'd do surveillance for hours and hours on some people's homes and just trying to figure out who BTK was. And then I was going out of town a particular day, and God rest Kenny Landwehr, he goes, where are you going? And I said, I'm going on vacation. He goes, oh, well, we're going to put this guy in custody who works at this congregation. We're going to try to arrest him tomorrow. Too bad you can't be here. And I was like, wait, really? What are you? You know, and of course, he wouldn't say much more. But they arrested him, and obviously it's the right guy, and it was good to have him.
Well, that was a time for many, many years.
Yes,
when
yes.
That guy was operating.
Yeah.
We didn't know, especially our women.
Well, me and you, we lived in the area where his last victim.
The last victim, right? Over there on 13th, yeah.
Miss Wegerly, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's in our neighborhood we grew up in, or I grew up in, and you're still in. So that touched home, and I can actually remember my parents, my dad walking me to the back of the house, making sure I was supposed to check the phone lines when I walked home from Garrison Elementary when I was a kid. Mm. Make sure you check the phone lines before you go in.
Really?
And how
about that?
Yeah, and that was so. I was the older brother here, the oldest son, so that was a responsibility for me. So.
You're listening to Issues 2023 on the Odyssey Radio stations. Our guest is former Wichita Police Officer James Espinoza, and the way we're going right now, we're going to need about four more shows to get this done. James.
Just do it.
But have you had a chance to look at the? Let's talk about the Jensen Hughes report on the Wichita Police Department.
Yes.
You got it in front of you there. It looks like 123 pages of consultants talking to the police officers. And you want to give us just a couple of observations of a couple of things that you've seen that stand out to you?
Well, yeah. I think there's been mistakes made with who we hired. I won't speak of his name. He's now some back in Minnesota where probably he belongs. He really just destroyed this police department. And I'm going to say it just like that. There's, you know, men and women have retired And I won't say they were forced out, but just couldn't deal with him and his narcissistic attitude and tendencies and not listening to people that are born and raised in Wichita. I mean, this is my city, you know, and I'm proud of Wichita. And I think that these others that have also, you know, just, you know, banging their head on the table because there's things that aren't getting done and different priorities. And crime has risen. When he was on his watch, we had more homicides in 1 year and beat the old record, which is not a record you want to beat. And now people will say, well, crime across the country is on the rise. Well, I understand that, but let's take care of Wichita, Kansas. And there's things we should have done and we didn't do. Policies were changed. I remember just a quick incident. You know, we issued, you know, use of force across the country has been huge. And so we had, they'd issued beanbag rounds to the supervisors in the cars. Well, they didn't even have a policy on it. So, I mean, you're setting yourself up to fail when you have, like, minor things like that that aren't getting done. And those are things that are important for the police department to do to be able to cover themselves in the city of Wichita. And the proper training is important. I'm not saying they weren't properly trained, but again, training is, you know, policy is part of training, right? You got to have policies in place to be effective.
You're talking about policy. You're talking about the attention to detail.
Well, yeah, use of force policy.
Yeah, and that's important. Very important.
Very, 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 very important.
Yeah.
So I think that, again, across the country, I know I just checked this week, WPD's down 66 officers. The sheriff's department is down about 10 deputies in the field and about 85 jailers. And so I think this current rookie class, there's 12 deputies in that. Police applicants in this one. They just can't seem to get any of the numbers in. And that's disheartening because it's a great job at the same time. I mean, as you talked earlier about the media, right? You know, the media has a different, you know, different outlook sometimes on law enforcement and maybe don't understand why we do what we do, and that needs to be, we need to educate them as well.
You know, the thing we hear over and over again, James, is training, training, training. You think rookie officers in general are getting enough training? And is it the right kind of training?
I think they do. However, you know, I laugh at some of these new officers that I know. You know, I don't know how I survive without patrol rifles, without computers, without, I'm being facetious, obviously, tasers, right? And so some of that we've went away from getting hands-on, and sometimes you have to go hands-on with people, right? You just can't tase everybody, and I think we're so worried about what the community thinks, and I'm not saying you don't need to be, but what I'm saying is you need to go home at night. You have to take care of business. And I get frustrated with this old leadership that allowed, you know, I go back to the protests we had in our community and the phone calls I got when, and I'll be completely blunt here, the department allowed people to ransack that Quick Trip at 21st North Kansas and destroyed that Quick Trip. And I got calls from the Latino community like, that's our Quick Trip. And now we don't have a Quick Trip. And of course they rebuilt it, but you know, why did that even happen? And I think that's, you know, that's things that we probably need to be more aggressive about, to be quite frank.
Well,
Steve,
training
is part of that, right?
You know, in these high-profile police brutality cases, and this is something I want to get your thoughts. There's usually a reason officers have initiated. I'm not going to excuse anything that's happened, but there's reason that they have initiated contact with someone. It's just you get the last 30 seconds when you needed the first 30 seconds, I guess.
Well, I think they're perceptive that some people have that men and women join the police departments that they serve to be race. You know, they want to be racial, and that's just not the case. There are bad police officers, Steve. I'm not going to not say that. There's bad doctors. I read a study or tried to do some research before I came in about, I think there's 250,000 people that die at physicians' hands every year. And you don't hear people protesting doctors, surgeons, right? And, you know, they take that, you know, law enforcement in general has thousands of stops every day in our country. And just it's unfortunate they just pick the media picks that one that's what? Going to sell papers or ads or have listeners or watchers or viewers or what have you. And so I was told by somebody years ago, if it's not red, dead, involving a child or an animal, it won't make the news. I don't know what your opinion is on that, but that's what I was told when I took the PIO job.
Pretty much the way it is.
Right. It's just what it is. So
they used to say, if it bleeds, it leads.
Exactly, right? And those are some of the cliches I learned being the public information officer. But I think the training is definitely important. But, you know, I've talked to some supervisors lately because I guess I listen well or something. But there's many times on certain parts of town, there are only 8-9 police officers working an entire bureau.
Wow.
And a lot of it, they say they're up to, you know, they're only down 66 staff members, right? Well, what they don't count, they still count them, and they're not there, is officers that are on military leave, those that are in injury or on light duty. Some of them are on rotations, meaning they're doing maybe an investigation job to learn that job. And then they're also maybe could be suspended. But they still keep those positions, and they're low staff. People can't take days off. And that's been a problem.
What should parents teach their children about respect for the law and law enforcement officers?
Well, one, do what they say. I guess I would ask that, Steve. When was it okay just to not do what the police say? I mean, I'm sure you taught your children that. And I guess, as I tell everybody that talks to me about this, there's ways to file complaints on law enforcement, okay? But arguing with an officer and running from an officer and fighting an officer isn't the way to do it. And that's when bad things happen. If you look at all these high-profile cases across the country, people fought officers. They ran from officers. They heightened the situation. And I think people forget that law enforcement officers are humans. And that's an issue that I think people forget. And it's, you know, humans make mistakes, right? You mentioned that earlier, right?
You think there's... Well, I think you probably answered that. There are such things as bad cops.
Absolutely.
You already told me there's bad media people. You look right.
I said bad cops first.
Right.
But no, I mean, you know, I talk in my class about the officer in South Carolina who shot that man in the back and then threw down a taser. That's murder. Okay. You obviously have the case in Minnesota with George Floyd. Murder. Those officers were found guilty and are doing prison time.
What are you doing these days?
I'm a current instructor at Mays Career Academy, and I teach law classes through Wichita State Tech.
Okay. Any regrets about a career as a police officer, James?
Regrets? I don't think I have regrets. I think there's some maybe things I would have done different. Absolutely.
Would you recommend a job to a youngster who's looking for something to do for a living?
Well, I'm going to say this, and you know, most human beings – have about two critical incidents in their life, okay? A 20-year law enforcement officer has about 700. And so what's being forgot about is the mental health of a lot of these individuals. And, you know, when my father was on, you could do 20 years out and retire. Well, there was something to say about that, because look at that. You got 700 critical incidents during your career, right? Now we have officers working 25, 30, 35, and then you have, you know, retired Officer Bachman, who worked 43, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've talked about that on your show. But anyway, so I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that come with that. And these officers earn their money, you know, working critical car accidents, murder investigations. Obviously, children cases are always, you know, some post-traumatic stress on those and memories you have. So
we're out of time. Thanks. Our guest, former Wichita police officer James Espinoza. We'll have to do this again.
Please.
That's all for this edition of Issues 2023. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.